Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Global Ports Holding third quarter results equity investor conference call. Today's speakers will be Mr. Emre Sayan, CEO, Jan Fonn Ferre, Head of Corporate Finance, Martin Braun, Investor Relations Director. And I hand over to your first speaker, Mr. Emre Sayan. Sir, please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I would like to start by summarizing Q3 and the first 9 months. Overall, the positive trading trends highlighted at the interim results have continued into Q3, and we have delivered strong results for the first 9 months period. Our cruise business has performed in line with our expectations. However, due to abnormal seasonal weather in the Mediterranean, we have lost some passengers, especially in Valletta, and I'll talk about that. Our commercial business has performed well in the period, especially delivered very good EBITDA numbers. Our full-year expectations of high single-digit organic growth in constant currency remains unchanged. Let us go into the numbers. So when we look at the first 9 months, our total revenue growth remains in high single digits, 7.5%, with our segmental EBITDA growing 18.2%, which gives us about 15% growth in consolidated EBITDA. The same number is 8.3% for the quarter, and the segmental EBITDA is growing 10.1%. Our revenue for the quarter is down by almost 1%, and this is due to two factors. One is, as I stated, the passenger numbers down in Q3 on the cruise side, and on the commercial side, flat volumes, which were compensated on the EBITDA side with some project cargo and with some additional service revenues. The underlying profit for the period is $30 million. That's down from last year, about 19.8%. We'll talk about that. We'll go into that. And our profit and loss for the period is almost zero, and we'll also explain why that is the case. Most of these are due to non-cash effects, by the way. So let's start with the loss of 0.1 million in the first 9 months. This was mainly due to a 24.1% amortization expense in port operation rights. We have discussed this many times before. It's a non-cash IFRS item, and it has been affected by the exchange rate fluctuations in the first 9 months. And if you have any further questions on that, Jan can answer that. We have had some positive impact here from the absence of IPO project expenses, which is actually a cash item which reflects positively in to our operating cash flow. The underlying profit for the first 9 months of 24.1% decreased by $5.9 million compared to the same period. And this was positively affected by the increase in EBITDA and higher income from equity accounted investees, meaning the ports that we consolidate or by equity pickup. But it was also negatively affected by net foreign exchange loss due to a hedge ineffectiveness. And also higher expenses on the M&A project side. Strong operating cash flow of $50 million in the first 9 months compared to $33 million last year. Net debt to EBITDA ratio 3.0 times. Gross debt to EBITDA ratio 4.0 times. So these have actually improved because it's a high volume quarter. We see this trend every year. To talk a little bit more about the cruise passenger volumes, which affect the Q3 numbers, We have actually estimated mostly this drop in passenger number growth versus last year. Mainly, it's due to 2017, not 18. 18 is a relatively steady year, but in 2017, for example, in Malaga, we had low first half numbers and then a very high August passenger number. So when you compare these numbers, though we are on target in terms of the budget numbers, the numbers in Q3 look low, especially compared to the H1 numbers. For example, in Cruers, which is the summation of Barcelona and Malaga, H1 growth numbers were 14.4%, Q3 is minus 5% due to what I just highlighted. In Q4, we'll be back to growth. We're expecting to grow, mid single digits, and I don't see this comparison as a big concern. On the cruise side, as you know, we also signed the concession agreement for Zadar in Q3, and so we started operating Zadar together with Havana in Q3, only 1 month. So it's not a long time to be operating these ports. On the commercial side, general and bulk cargo volumes were soft, like in H1. TU throughput was flat. Hence, our revenue and EBITDA for the first 9 months were up 6.7% and 18.4% respectively. And in Q3, revenue was up 2.5%, but EBITDA was 22.5% higher than last year. And this is, as I said, mostly due to, more profitable movements, but also income coming from services, new warehouses, and some project cargo. So when we look at the outlook and the current trading, we see this trend continuing into Q4, and we are pleased to announce that our guidance remains unchanged. In fact, we'll be closing the year closer to the higher single-digit growth numbers. I'm also happy to announce that on the inorganic side, we are today announcing an MOU that we very recently signed in relation to port operations in Antigua and Barbuda with the government. And the next step will be signing the concession agreement. It's a bilateral discussion, and it's an exclusive MOU. So there will be no tender in this for this port, as far as we know. I think that concludes my remarks. Now I want to, together with the team, answer what questions you may have. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you for holding until we have our first question. Our first question comes from Mark McVicker from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Morning all, how are we?
Very good, Mark, thank you.
Good. Actually, I have three questions, not to upset the moderator. Firstly, could you give us a bit of an update, because it's been a while, I think, on what's going on in the marble market and whether the devaluation of the Turkish lira has had any impact, or whether you likely see it having any impact on the export performance?
Okay. Shall I answer you now, or?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's good. So the marble market and the marble numbers are not any different in Q3 than they were in H1. Slightly below last year, flattish, we might say. We did not expect immediate pickup because of weak Turkish lira on the marble side. We did mention that this could be expected on the cement side. I'll come to cement, but in terms of marble, we question this every single day due to the trade wars between China and the U.S. Is the marble market affected? And the answer is not directly, but as you know, I don't know when exactly it was. I think it was the first half of this year. There was general quotas applied by the U.S. to Chinese imports. And my team basically says that had an indirect negative effect on marble volumes a little bit. But as you can see, not a huge impact. So short answer, the trend continues in H1. And we do not see any further negative impact or any pickup for the rest of the year. In fact, I was just talking to the team, and the numbers for the current months looks good compared to last year. So we'll be closing probably close to last year's numbers on the marble side. In terms of cement, we were expecting a pickup because it's a very sensitive, dollar-sensitive or exchange rate-sensitive export business in Turkey. However, as you might know, that there is a huge effort in Turkey. There was a huge effort in Turkey to open the airport in Istanbul, and all cement factories were working for the domestic market, trying to, you know, give enough cement for this project, for other projects. And, you know, the team feels now is probably the time when the cement factories will focus more on export markets with the Turkish lira stabilizing as well. See, weak Turkish lira is good, but so long as you can... you can forecast the level of the exchange rate. If the exchange rate keeps moving, it's very hard for exporters to really commit anything and improve their volumes. So those would be our views on the marble and cement markets.
Okay. Just one point of clarification, Emre. I'm not sure I understand how, if the U.S. is applying quotas, and obviously it started with $50 million of affected goods at the start of this year and went to $200 billion in September. How does that affect the flow of product between Turkey and China?
So, because China is an exporter of construction material as well. The Chinese construction companies are very active in, around the world, really, and that is the impact. I want to underline the fact that there is no quota on marble imports, as far as we know. Like I said, it's an indirect impact.
Okay, got it. Okay, second question is, could you say a little bit more about the project cargo in particular? You know, obviously it's doing well at the moment. How far forward can you see, that activity, like the wind farms and stuff like that, going? Do you have any visibility in 2019 at this stage?
So the project cargo that affected Q3 was actually not the one in Adria. That was the first half. This was coming from Antalya. And we have some visibility, and we think that this activity will go on into 2019. It's hard to guess, obviously, since it's project, it's hard to guess the exact amount or even the timing, but we think there will be a similar impact in at least the first half of 2019. I also want to remind you that some of the upside here is also coming from a warehouse that we completed and rented out, which is also, you know, bringing in some commercial volumes. That activity will obviously continue. We have a, you know, we have an ongoing contract with the tenants.
Okay, thank you. And then my last question was just, I know you touched on sort of Malaga and Valletta. Were there any other notable sort of out or underperformers across the rest of the portfolio in Q3?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't call it an underperformance. It's really a play of numbers versus last year. But Barcelona, for example, in the first half versus last year, had very high growth, I think in the vicinity of 17% in cruise passenger numbers. And in Q3, those numbers were down to single digits. So, if you will, that had an impact on the passenger numbers as well. But by far the biggest impact came from Valletta, because Valletta was both experiencing a low year before the numbers pick up again in 2019 onwards. And, you know, we're basically, we know some of these numbers and some of the agreements are being made as we speak for turnaround operations. But we had a couple of freak storms in the Mediterranean that made us lose, you know, a number of calls in high season. And it's, you know, it's not common to see almost tropical storms in the middle of the Med, but it happened. As you know, one hit Lisbon as well, and in fact went into France and killed people. So it's been an interesting summer.
Okay. And then the obvious follow-on to that is, as you look into 19, do you think the cruise lines will be growing their Mediterranean fleets as fast as they're growing their overall fleets? And within all of that, what can you tell us about inquiry levels for Turkey?
Okay. So as for the Med, I think the Med is poised for, you know, a good couple of years to come at least, because when we look at the deployments, cruise lines are still wary about Asia. 2019 is going to be a record year with 19 ships coming into the market. In the Med, there are signs of normalization in South Med and East Med. We see passenger numbers picking up in 2019 in our ports as well. But, you know, I also hear cruise lines, and in fact ourselves as well, looking into some, opening up some destinations in South Med. For example, there's a tender going on in Tunisia right now. So the answer is yes. I expect growth in the Med, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Med was one of the highest, you know, highest growing markets or sub-regions in the world in 2019.
Okay, and anything specific to update on in terms of inquiries and bookings for your Turkish ports?
It's basically in line with what I said previously. 2019 we'll see numbers pick up. This time it will be material. I mean, right now we're seeing, you know, very small. For example, in Ege, I think we have a 5% growth or something, but it will be double digit growth in 2019. But real numbers will come back in 2020.
Okay, that's very good. Thank you.
Our next question is from Sergio Calci from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, thanks for the call. Just had a quick question on your concession extension at Bodrum and Antalya. Could you please give an update on how that's going.
Sure. So the concession extension in Bodrum, we actually, we talked about this before. We have the, you know, final court decision, and it's positive. We are just in the period of signing an agreement and finalizing the terms with the government to actually operationalize this. Since our concession was running out in 2019, it was good timing, and we're not concerned on that side. As for Antalya and also Ege Port in Kuşadası, we are following up similar claims to extend our concessions there. As I highlighted before, they are slightly in different categories, and the legal process is still in play. And we'll update you if we, you know, if we hear further news from those.
Okay. Do you expect to hear something by the end of this year, or is it something which we'll hear probably next year?
It would be difficult to say, Sergio. I mean, it's like I said, it's a complicated legal / governmental procedure. What I can tell you is, I think the Turkish government has every reason to extend our concessions because of two reasons. One, we are doing a really good job, we believe, in operating those ports. And two, it would be good to have, income for the government, especially in this period. So I think it makes sense.
Okay, guys, thanks a lot.
Our next question is from Dolcott from Liberum. Please go ahead.
I think that might be me. It's Gerald Crew from Liberum here. Two questions, if I can. Firstly, on the cruise side, you've reported lower revenue and lower volumes, but your EBITDA margin has gone up. I was just wondering why that was. And secondly, a question on Antigua. I know it's not a done deal yet, but there is a suggestion that investment will be required. I was just wondering whether you might be able to give some indication of the size of commitments that you might need to make, and whether that can be funded from existing resources or not. Thanks.
So your first question, on the cruise side, our EBITDA is doing better than obviously passenger numbers. This has to do with a number of reasons. The mix of turnaround passengers versus transit passengers, the drop was, especially in the Iberian Peninsula, mostly transit. But turnaround passengers increased, so that actually has a positive impact on our numbers. Ancillary revenues did okay. That's a highly profitable portion of our revenues. And it has to do with the port mix as well. Plus, we are still doing better, although not as good as H1 comparatively. We're still doing better in ports like Singapore and Lisbon. So on the equity pickup side, that's also helping us with our EBITDA numbers. So those would be the main items that make things look better on the EBITDA side. In terms of Antigua, I mentioned, this is just the MOU stage right now. I want to underline that one more time. I will have Jan answer this in a bit more detail. What I can tell you is it's a mid-sized port, important port for us. And as you know, in the Caribbean, the sizes are bigger in terms of passenger numbers, in terms of revenue per passenger, and hence investments can, you know, be expected to be slightly bigger compared to European ports as well. Having said that, Jan, would you like to add anything in terms of the investment without telling us what the investment value is?
No, and also answering the questions on financing. So it's, yes, we have to go through the concession discussions with the government before we can disclose the exact numbers, but it would be, we are very confident that we can finance it with the local banking market and have sufficient resources on balance sheet to fund the equity portion for that port. So that should not pose a problem for us.
Okay, thank you very much.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you for holding until we have further questions. We have a question from Mr. James from Citi. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, everybody. Just following on from that on Antigua. Sorry, I missed the beginning of the call, so apologies if you already covered this. But it looks like it's about the same size as Valletta. Is that a sort of a comparable we should be thinking about in terms of scale of revenue and EBITDA? Secondly, can you talk about progress in ramping up your operations at Havana? And then thirdly, where are we at with negotiations on Nassau, please?
Okay, so you asked about Antigua and Nassau, and I missed the middle.
Havana.
Yeah, Havana, okay. So as for the comparison to Valletta, I'll give it to Jan to answer that. But in terms of passenger volumes, I think you're right. That's why I said it's a mid-sized port. But in terms of other aspects, Jan, is there anything you would like to add here?
I think James is a bit too early to comment. We'll really have to go through the details of the concession agreement. And hence, in terms of passenger volumes, fully agree, comparable to Valletta. It is, although nearly 100% transit passengers, whereas Valletta has a number of turnaround passengers. So that's one difference. And another key difference, which again, we'll go into details when those details are defined. But as a general principle, Caribbean ports are very important for the local economy, much more important than the European ports. So you will see in our Caribbean a much greater discussion with the government about sharing the economic impact to the island. So but I can assure you that these projects, the way we look at it, are highly profitable, in particular because of the high passenger numbers, and they achieve we expect to achieve our target return rates. But for further details on revenue and EBITDA, please give us a bit more time to negotiate the agreement.
And just following on from that, is the scale of the sort of retail and food and beverage outlets in Antigua sort of comparable to Valletta, which I know is quite highly developed?
We have the part of the discussions will be a significant, will take over a retail, existing retail and significant expansion of that retail activity. But in Valletta, please don't forget, Valletta is the only port in our portfolio where we actually generate the retail revenues ourselves. We operate the retail revenue. We are not planning to do that for other ports. So it will be a rental model with higher margins, but only rental income in terms of top line.
Okay, if that answers your questions on Antigua, I'd like to continue with Havana, your Havana question.
Please, yes.
Okay, so as you know, we have just taken over the operations in Havana, working with the government, looking at improvements. I basically see this in three parts. One is managing the day-to-day operations. The second one is improving the existing facilities, and the third one is obviously building new piers and new terminals. In terms of the day-to-day operations, one pier in Havana is almost 100% occupied throughout the year. The other one is 70%. This is probably the highest number in the world. And it's the difficulty there is managing, managing new applications, trying to find space for all the ships for the days that they want, and making sure that once the ships are there, that operations run smoothly. And for that, we're collaborating with the ships, with the captain's crew, I should say learning day by day. And you have to understand that it takes time to learn, to understand how to optimize, how to run a port well. It's kind of like getting to know a complicated machine, and we're doing that right now. In terms of the improvements in existing facilities, we're looking into everything, you know, from cleanliness to painting the terminal to, you know, improving safety measures. In terms of building, we're discussing with the government and with the construction company when they will start, and doing our best to help out with the implementation of the designs that, in fact, we played an important role in terms of designing.
Okay.
So for Nassau, the government very recently announced a request, an RFP, and we are in the process of updating our proposal that we submitted, which actually led to this RFP, and pretty soon we'll submit our proposal to the tender, and we hope to win. Obviously, we have local partners, very important partners. We're allowing Bohemians to participate through a vehicle, a fund. And we're looking at how we can redesign the port and the waterfront, and to integrate it to the city in Nassau to basically improve the customer experience and the perception of the port. And we believe there is a lot of potential in Nassau, although it's one of the biggest ports in that region. We think there's a lot of potential still.
When do you think we might get the results of the RFP?
Probably early next year, but again, it's difficult to say. Sometime in 2019 would be a safer answer.
Yeah, and are you aware of a number of other parties entering that process, or can you quantify the number of parties entering the process?
We're not told who is entering. In fact, that's, I think, not certain yet. There were news in newspapers about Bohemian businessmen forming a consortium, being interested in that. There were news about a cruise line consortium being interested, but you never know until the last moment who is going to participate. By the way, our chairman just walked in and he just, you know, came from Nassau, so I'm basically looking at him right now if there's anything he would like to add.
Good morning, everybody. What's the question, Emre?
Nassau.
What's the specific question about Nassau?
So I was asking about where we were in the process and when we might hear and who else is competing for the concession.
The tender is on the 17th of December, the last day to present the proposal, which is a public information. Keeping in mind that the election is in 2021, the construction period is no less than 2 years. I presume they have to make up their mind on whom to award by the first quarter of 2019 and even sign the concession agreement probably because it's at the minimum 24-month construction. Therefore, the handover of the port should happen by the second quarter at the latest, or third quarter, let's say. Competition-wise, I'm sure there will be some competition because that's 3.5-4 million passengers going towards 6 million in the next 4 years. But that's really irrelevant. To me, it's personally, it's irrelevant. We have very strong local partners, very, very strong. The idea there is because it's in also public domain, we are basically having a retail investor base of no less than 20,000 people, which will take a chunk of the Nassau Cruise Port Ltd. Through a equity offering or fund offering post the RFP. So we are extremely well positioned, whether it's our strategic approach, whether it's our relations with stakeholders meaning the government, the basic merchants, stakeholders meaning the retail guy on the street, stakeholders meaning the people who, civil servants, everybody practically. So I'm cautiously hopeful about that tender, keeping in mind that probably is the most strategic cruise port in the world.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you for holding until we have our next question. We have a question from Greg Johnson from Shore Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, guys. Good morning. Just a couple of quick questions. One, just any sort of early thoughts on CapEx investment for next year, X new projects? And secondly, can you sort of elaborate on sort of the FX hit on the sort of bottom line, on the loss for the 9-month period? Thank you.
Jan, can you please take these questions?
Sure, exactly. Our CapEx for next year will be in line with, excluding acquisitions, in line with our regular maintenance CapEx, as we have always guided. So that will be 4 to 6 million maintenance CapEx, and as usual, there will be typically smaller projects. So we're looking at a high single-digit CapEx number next year, similar to this year.
Okay.
Again, excluding acquisitions. The foreign exchange impact is something which is first of all a non-cash, largely a non-cash impact. In our P&L, it's related to the or the largest impact here is related to so-called hedge ineffectiveness in the bond issuer Global Liman, the 100% subsidiary of Global Ports Holding PLC, and under certain conditions, the liabilities, which is effectively is the euro bond in US dollars. And the assets, which are the individual operating companies, under certain conditions, you can create a hedge. Hence, no foreign exchange effects will not impact the P&L. And these conditions have been met in 2017, but not in due to the strong currency fluctuations, stronger currency fluctuations in 2018. That hedge became ineffective as per IFRS. So we have to account for a part of the currency fluctuations in Global Liman, the bond issuer, which has a functional currency in Turkish lira, and that will consolidate into the GPH PLC. That's highly technical, and I must say it's in our point of view, a pure IFRS non-cash effect, because as you know, the underlying currency risk is there is no underlying currency risk. It is truly a matter of the translation of these hedge ineffectiveness, most of that, through the Turkish holding company Global Liman. And that is impacting our net profit, but not cash flow. And we also believe not our actual risk profile.
Jan, maybe we should also add that we are working on remedies to improve our hedging in that sense. So we'll report to you probably in Q4 what precautions or what actions are being taken on this. So we're working on that.
Okay. Thanks for your time.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there's any further questions, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you for holding. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. We have no further questions. Dear speakers, back to you for the conclusion.
All right, so this concludes our Q3 call. Thank you very much, everyone, and hope to meet you again for the full year results or maybe before that. As always, we're open to any other questions that you might have. Please contact us through our investor relations, Martin, and we'll do our best to explain and help you out. Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. Thank you all for your participation. You may now disconnect.